Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 121 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and it is about a week until Christmas 2020. And boy, do I have somebody in store for you, a topic that's really been something that's on my mind. Now, what do you do when a pandemic kills your book launch plans that you've been planning for over a year? Now, for Melanie Diesel, she got creative and used guerrilla marketing tactics, some of which I've never heard of, to promote her book. For example, she took stock photos of her book in different settings and uploaded to Unsplash, a free stock photo site. This resulted in over 100,000 impressions and downloads so far. Now, in this episode, Melanie really goes in depth in the guerrilla marketing tactics she used to get her book, The Content Fuel Framework, in the number one new list book in the creativity section in Amazon Books. In episode 121, you learn first how Melanie used her birthday to get thousands of people to purchase a book. Second, how she got over 100,000 impressions on images of her book in Unsplash. Third, how she successfully pitched herself as a guest in over 80 podcasts, live and Facebook live shows. Now, before we jump in, I have created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode. This one is not one, but two PDF pages with all that actionable things that you can take away to grow your business with the guerrilla marketing tactics that Melanie used here. Why take notes when you can just literally just steal mine? Go to growtoday.fm/121 to get it now. You can also find this link in the description of the show in whatever podcast app you use. Get it now, because when I publish the next week's episode, this week's cheat sheet will be gone. You don't want that to happen. I also want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts like Melanie on the show. Thanks to 42 Agency. Now, 42 Agency works with high-growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue and marketing operations that accelerate their demand generation and pipeline growth. To learn more and get $500 in free consulting time, go to growtoday.fm/42 or find that link in the description of wherever podcast app you use. Well, enough about this. Let's jump on in my chat with Melanie. Hey everybody, I am excited to chat with Melanie about her book, The Content Fuel Framework, and how she launched it and promoted it during one of the craziest things that happened in 2020, which is the pandemic. How's it going, Melanie? How are things with you this afternoon?
You know, I'm hanging in there as best we can in 2020. I think that's about as good as it gets this year, right?
That's true, but you're one of the highlights, I guess, I'm guessing for you is your book. Like, it's doing well, and you know, people are talking about it. I saw you were the keynote for, I think, content marketing
world. Yeah.
I follow you on Twitter, so congrats on that.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, it's been a very strange year, to say the least, but there have been some shining moments, luckily, in between all the chaos. And, you know, getting to keynote at Content Marketing World was definitely one of them. And, you know, the book, although the launch didn't go exactly how I had imagined, there's been some bright moments hearing from readers and things like that as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I want to talk about that. I want to get into that. But before we do, and really talking about the Content Fuel Framework, your book and the promotions for that, you said you love coffee and documentaries, and I can't go on without asking, what is your favorite coffee bean from or coffee drink that you like, and what is your favorite documentary that you like to watch?
Well, you know, I've been going through cycles of coffee. You know, I think my favorite changes from time to time. Right now, because everything is so crazy, I find myself wanting like comfort, you know, and so I've actually been drinking caramel lattes, which is kind of like a former favorite of mine. So I used to really enjoy that, I guess, when I was in college. And so it kind of reminds me of fonder times. It's a flavor that I find really comforting. So I think we all do that, kind of go back to comfort, you know, in those moments. And my favorite documentary, oh man, that's a really tough one. I know that, I'm not sure the name of it off the top of my head, but I just recently watched a documentary on Netflix about David Attenborough. And it was sort of his plea sharing the change he's seen in our environment and to our animal wildlife, even just over the course of his career, and sort of making a very strong call to action to step up and take care of this world that we've been given. And that one, that was a really, really moving one.
Yeah, I've seen his other documentary, The Grizzly Man, and he has a great storyteller, but also I'm jealous of his voice. It's just so comforting, right?
It really is, yeah.
In terms of your drink, do you make that at home? Are you buying? I'm curious if you're like really that coffee, like you have everything, right?
I don't unfortunately have an espresso machine set up myself at home. I wouldn't know how to use it if I did, but don't have one here at the moment. So luckily there is a cafe here not too far from home that is still doing curbside pickup and you know, takeout options. So I've been trying to also support those businesses when I can.
No, that makes sense, and that I do the same way. Like the coffee beans I buy is locally, brewed here in Toronto. We've been talking about 2020, and you're talking about curbside. We talked about how there's a lot of crazy stuff. We said already, like one of your highlights must be launching that book. I saw you tweeted in February that it was the number one new release in creativity. Congrats first. And one of my first questions, I'm curious what your story behind writing this book is and why you put it together.
You know, the book really came from a place of service in a way, in that a lot of the work that I do, you know, in a non-COVID year is consulting and trainings. And so I do a lot of corporate workshops and speak at conferences, like we mentioned before. But I realized that a lot of the people who could really benefit from the stuff that I'm teaching and the stuff that I'm sharing may not ever be lucky enough to be in a position where they could attend one of my talks, or their company could maybe afford to bring in, you know, an outside expert. And so I was feeling kind of bad. Like I have all this knowledge and information and these tips and tricks. And, you know, there's a lot of people who may not get access to this information. And so for me, the book was a way for me to make the things that I'm teaching inside these corporations, these bigger companies, try to make it more accessible for, you know, small business owners, entrepreneurs, nonprofits, students, you know, the kind of folks who could learn and benefit just as much. But again, you know, they might not be able to have it in their budget to attend a major conference in another city or another country, or, you know, aren't in one of these organizations that invests very heavily in ongoing education. So that was really the mission, is to try to take those things that I'm usually teaching in workshops or in conference sessions and things like that, and try to pack as much as possible into the book so that if someone picks it up, you know, they can take what I'm sharing and hopefully have it make a difference in their own content strategy right away.
I love how you're talking about your mission is to help more people. I think that's so admirable. And but at the same time, I'm curious what it's done for your business and personal brand. I'm sure that it's opened up doors and gotten new keynotes and other things. What has the book done for you?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's really hard to quantify, especially in the age of COVID, is sort of the outcomes of the book. And I think a big part of that is I didn't write this book with the intention of, you know, sort of having a big splash of publicity and, like, you know, going on Good Morning America and making the New York Times bestseller list. Like, I really viewed it as more of a long game. So I think we're still seeing some of the benefits of that even months out. You know, I'm trying not to conclude its impact just yet, because I think it still has a lot more mileage in it. But yeah, one of the things that has been really rewarding for me is actually hearing from people who have read the book, or, you know, have been given the book or otherwise gotten access to it, and hearing, you know, that it's helped them, that they've been able to use it at work, that they've shared it with their team or bought it as a gift for a colleague. Like, that is, because that was really part of the mission of the book, is to help people, then hearing that it's achieving that is probably the best impact for me. But from a personal brand standpoint, yeah, I mean, you know, I studied journalism, so I've always been a writer. And so the ability to say that I wrote a book you know, is certainly a mark of pride for me. I think for a lot of people, having a book is a nice marker of credibility. So if someone hasn't heard of me before or hasn't come in contact with my work, then hearing that I've written a book, I'm sure in some way kind of elevates their trust in my expertise in their mind. And that's, you know, of course, hard to quantify what difference that makes, but I'm sure that it has, you know, sort of an impact in some way. And I think hopefully the same thing is true for anyone who, you know, is considering hiring me as a coach, as a speaker, as a corporate trainer, that, you know, that mark of credibility either helps, you know, them see more value in what it is that I do. And perhaps that helps me, you know, get the rates that we're used to getting. or maybe it may help me take a step above some other folks that they may be considering. So I think it's really about that third party credibility that, you know, this book is out there and it's, you know, people have rated it highly and it's ranking well, and all of that kind of points to, okay, maybe she has something to say that's worth listening to.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. It's something that you know, people who write a book, I look at them and say, oh, they have something to share on the podcast or
yeah,
to really talk about. I think that's something that business owners should consider. But I want to dig into your promotion, because this conversation was kicked off because you tweeted something on Twitter about how the pandemic killed your book launch plans, and yeah, it probably really killed a lot of like travel plans for folks too, yeah, as well. But what was the original plan for promoting the book before this whole thing went down?
So I'll preface this by saying that I know that these experiences that I had are far from, you know, the worst experiences of people throughout COVID, right? There's much more serious things happening, and I know that. But since we're breaking it down here, you know, initially when the book came out, the plan was we had a 5-city book tour and book signing event where, you know, books were being purchased in bulk by a sponsor, a partner that I was working with, and they were going to be, you know, 100 to 200 people in each of these cities who had signed up to come and get their book signed and, you know, to meet with me. So that's really exciting as an author to like get to meet your readers in person and, you know, sign books for them is a really cool experience. Obviously that couldn't happen as planned. So we tried shifting one of those events to virtual, but, you know, book signings virtually, some of the magic is lost. I mean, you could still do a Q&A, but, you know, you obviously can't sign the books, and it's not really efficient to send that many books personally, you know, me carrying 100 books to the post office or something. So it really was a challenge, and we wound up really not being able to do that the way we had envisioned. The other thing that was, you know, a big part of the plan is in a non-COVID year, I typically speak at, you know, 30 to 60 events, just, you know, public events, depending on the year and, you know, which season it is and things like that. So I had a number of pretty large speeches and audiences that were going to be happening in, you know, the month leading up to the book launch and the month after the book launch. I had really packed it very tightly to try to maximize, you know, my exposure to audiences who might buy a copy. And many of those events had also agreed to, you know, bulk buy a substantial amount to be able to give to attendees for free. Now, obviously, as things started to shut down in late February, right as the book came out on the 24th, a lot of those events were canceled or shifted online. And as we just said, the book giveaway situation doesn't translate very well to an online environment. So a lot of those orders were, you know, canceled or pulled back or, you know, made smaller, and they only decided to send 5 to, you know, for contest winners or something. So that all of that, you know, really kind of dampened the momentum that we thought we would have going into the launch. And I think, you know, the first stage, if I'm being totally honest, was like a little bit of an internal temper tantrum, right? Like you have these visions and these goals and like things don't work out. And you're like, dang it, I worked for, you know, a whole year to write this book and get it already a launch. And I was so excited. And, you know, you have to kind of mourn the loss of what was before you could really clear your head and focus on what to do instead. So once I had sort of been grumpy enough about not getting to do it the way I had hoped, I really just started to think, what are my options here? What are the ways that I could still get in front of an audience, even if it's not on person, on a stage, you know? And for me, the answer to that was podcasts for sure. So the very first thing I did is I worked with someone on my team and we made a huge list of all the podcasts, you know, many that I had been on before who might be interested in having me back on, many new ones that were kind of a reach that, you know, hopefully they'd be willing. And then some friends that were really well connected in the podcast space that I thought might be willing to make some introductions, you know, assuming that I had something of value to say. And so we really tried to activate that as much as possible. You know, we had already done a little bit of that before the pandemic. You know, we had plans to have some podcasts, but we really had to sort of juice that whole, juice it up, you know, and make it the more of the primary focus. And so I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I'm sure that I've done 75 to 100 at least this year. I mean, I've been doing multiple interviews a week. So, you know, and not all of those have come out. So, you know, we'll see some interviews, you know, are still waiting to go live. So this, again, it's sort of like a rolling impact. But yeah, so a big part of it was podcasts. The next thing that I thought about is, okay, sort of related to podcasts, there are a lot of folks who have live shows of some kind, whether it's a Facebook Live, a YouTube Live, you know, they do Instagram Live Q&As. And so I similarly did a bunch of outreach and asked for introductions from folks who host those kind of shows to see, well, would I be an okay guest? Could I come join you and talk to your audience of real estate agents about how content can help their business, or, you know, your audience of whoever they are, you know, teachers or something, about how they can create content. So really just trying to get myself out there and reach as many people as possible, just sharing some of the value that's in the book in hopes that if they would like more, that they might go ahead and get one. So I think those were kind of my first reactions is like, okay, if I can't get in front of people on stage, what are some other ways I can get in front of people?
That totally makes sense. You're right. Yeah. And I love how, wow, 75 to 100 shows. Do you get tired talking about your book at some point, or you're still rolling and just swinging as you go forward?
I think it could go either way. You know, I think it's definitely, you know, there are some questions that I've answered so many times. The challenge for me is really to try to make it, I don't want to just give sound bites, you know, I don't want people to get bored. And I owe that to, you know, hosts like you who are gracious enough to have me come on and to your audience. So trying to keep things fresh and bring new perspectives, new stories, new examples, just trying to make sure it's still valuable, even if we're talking about things I've talked about before.
When we come back in just a moment, Melanie shares how she successfully pitched herself as a guest in over 80 podcasts and Facebook Live shows. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. Now, 42 Agency works with high-growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue marketing operations that accelerate demand generation and pipeline growth. They've worked with some amazing companies like OnFleet, HubDoc, GuestLogic, FlexDay, and more. And to top it off, I actually know the founder of 42 Agency, Camille Rexton, and he knows his stuff. So go reach out to him. He's actually offering a free $500 consulting time for Grow Today listeners. You can visit them at growtoday.fm/42 or find the link in the description. It'll redirect to this special offer. One more thing, don't forget to download the free Grow Cheat Sheet for this episode. It has all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Why take notes when you can just steal mine? You can take all the actionable tips from this episode and apply it to your business to accelerate the growth even faster. You can find the link in the description of this show. Download it now before I take it away, because it'll only be up until next week. Enough about this, so jump back into my chat with Melanie. I'm curious, can you talk a little bit about your outreach plan? I'm sure you worked with your team as well on this. How did you make sure to, you talked about introductions, but like, let's say it's a cold outreach. How do you make sure that you increase your chance of getting a yes from that host? Because just to put this into context, I get a ton of pitches as well. Mm-hmm. And there are a ton of bad ones as well. Yeah. And I'm sure you've, as you sent out this outreach, you figure out what is working, what works to get yourself on somebody's show that you might not have a warm intro to.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure that that you may actually have even better advice on this, you know, being on the receiving end. But You know, there are a few things that we learned over time or knew upfront and tried to take into account. So the first thing you need to do is, of course, make sure that the show is still active. You know, there are a lot of shows out there that they are on hiatus or they work on a seasonal basis, or maybe, you know, the host has moved on to other projects. So you don't want to look foolish reaching out to a show that's not active at the moment. And sort of in the same vein, make sure that they actually take guests. You know, that they're a show that has interviews and has guests, because you'll look, again, you'll make a very bad impression if you reach out to a show and it's a solo host or something. So making sure that, you know, that they actually accept guests and guests like you is a good first step. Then you want to make sure that you are actually a fit for the show. Just because a show is big or, you know, is one that you listen to doesn't necessarily mean that your topic is the right fit for that show. And, you know, you owe it to that, to yourself for spending the time, to the host for respecting their time, to make sure that you're only pitching someone if you think you can actually bring value to their audience, you know, in a way that's relevant and that makes sense. So, you know, those were sort of our first phases, is like, let's make sure these shows are active, that they accept guests, and that I'm the type of guest who could bring some value to their particular audience. One thing that worked really well is I looked to find shows that people like me had been on. So meaning people who are experts in similar topics or wrote books on similar topics, people who speak alongside me at conferences, because that lets you kind of have a connection with that person to say, hey, you know, I know you had so-and-so on your show recently. I really loved the episode, especially the part where you talked about your dogs, you know, be specific. And then say, you know, this person and I often speak at the same conferences, or we are experts in the same type of area. So I thought perhaps you might be interested in having me on to talk about the other side of this same topic or another perspective on this topic. So, you know, you're making a connection. You're showing that you're engaged in the show. You know the type of guests that they bring on, the type of things they talk about. You know, you can make a really specific appeal. So those are kind of the things that I would make sure are priority. And the next thing, I think a lot of it is just like similar email etiquette to anything. You know, don't send somebody, you know, I always call it, don't give somebody homework. Like, don't send somebody a massive long email with, you know, here's a link and here's a video to watch and here's my whole resume and here's a buy. I mean, you know, don't make it hard work for them to say yes. You know, write a short email, keep it short and sweet, and then have at the end additional links or information if they need it or want it. But don't, you know, if somebody opens an email and it's just a whole wall of text, it's like you're making it hard for somebody to answer it, you know?
No, that's totally true. I think you hit everything that I would be looking for. Mentioning a guest that's similar, I think that's a big thing. So, you know, keeping it short, personal, and just making sure that it's about helping people that hosts find something meaningful to share to their audience. So yeah, if you had pitched me, I would have said yes. I want to shift gears, and you know, you did that shows for the Facebook Live shows and podcast show tour. The other thing that I found fascinating from your that Twitter thread is you did something interesting with hiring a photographer and taking photos of your book with people reading in a cafe or next to a notebook. How did you use these photos to promote your book in a creative way, which I've never heard of it before until I read that Twitter thread?
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, you know, truthfully, the photos of the book happened before the pandemic, and it really worked out that we were able to get those done. My goal was, truthfully, when I was thinking about how I was going to be promoting the book, you know, when you launch a book, you have to talk about it a lot. And, you know, for me, I don't particularly like to be that salesy, that focused on conversion. So in order to make me feel more comfortable with it, I wanted to have a variety of images. I didn't just want, you know, graphics of the book for sale or me holding the book. It felt like too much. It didn't feel natural. So I hired a friend of mine who's a photographer to take what I would consider more like lifestyle photos. So exactly like you said, you know, she had a friend that lived near her who, you know, sat with the book and, you know, was taking notes while the book was on her lap and putting the book into her bag and putting it on a table next to a laptop. You know, just kind of the lifestyle photos that almost have a stock photo feeling, but not in a cheesy way. The kind of things you might see on Instagram or the kind of things you might take yourself if you were reading that book and just happened to like it and wanted to post on social media. I wanted it to feel natural and, you know, normal, not staged and uncomfortably awkward, you know? So she had taken those photos and my intent again was to use those on the book website, you know, use them in guest posts about the book or on social media. It was really just to kind of have almost like a library of images related to the book so that it wasn't just the same cover image out there. So obviously once things got weird and I was trying to figure out how I could, how I could reach people when I couldn't do it in person, I realized that I had an opportunity. So what I thought of, and I'm not the first person to do this. I haven't heard of anyone doing it for a book promotion necessarily, but basically I realized that these photos I had were kind of like stock photos that other people might want to use. So I created a profile on Unsplash, which does, you know, free stock style photography. I uploaded about 10 of the images and, you know, I have more, I may upload more down the line. But I uploaded those 10 images and I tagged them very strategically. So in thinking about the audience for my book, I know that they are creators. So I tagged these things with, you know, cafe, entrepreneur, solopreneur, creator, blogger, you know, the kind of words you'd be looking, the kind of keywords you'd look for if you were looking for that type of image for your blog post or something. So I had no idea, truthfully, if this would work. I just thought, you know what, it's not going to take me too long to upload them and we'll see what happens. And to my shock, the photos that I uploaded, you know, all of which feature my book in some capacity, have been viewed, at least the last count just before we hopped on this call, is nearly 500,000 times. So I have 487,000 impressions on those 10 photos that I uploaded. And they've been downloaded more than 2,256 downloads of those photos. So, you know, obviously I can't say for sure that any of that has translated to a single sale of the book. There's no way for me to know that. But what I do know is a lot of people who are probably in my target audience for this book have at least seen it and been exposed to it, so that maybe the next time they see it or they hear this episode, they think, oh, that sounds familiar. I've heard of that. And the other thing that I think is great is somewhere out there are a bunch of blog posts, social posts, you know, all kinds of who knows what that are featuring a photo with my book. And that, again, those folks might see it, you know, maybe someone gets curious and looks it up. It's just, to me, it's just awareness, you know, it's free impressions. And even if I can't quantify it, I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's doing something, even from an awareness, you know, an awareness perspective.
I mean, did you expect to get that many downloads?
Like, oh, no.
When you uploaded?
No, definitely not. It was truly an experiment. You know, it was truly an experiment. I had no idea. First of all, I didn't know if, you know, the photos were good enough to even, you know, show up when people were searching. I figured I'm new to Unsplash. Who knows? They'll probably show, you know, folks who already have 1,000 downloads first. I also didn't know if, you know, I'm not a stock photo keyword expert. So I wasn't sure that I was tagging it in the most strategic way. I thought I might have to adapt to help them get found, you know? So it was all an experiment, but it was really out of the spirit of, look, I don't know what else I can do right now. So it's time to try things. You know, we've never been in a pandemic. I've never been unable to be with my audience in person. And so we have to try something new. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And we move on to the next thing, you know?
No, it'd be funny to see in a year or two, your photos just showing up. It's like, yeah, that person that's like on a bunch of stock photos now appear in a random ads that, yeah, was on the news recently. That's super cool.
Yeah. And I have actually seen some of them in the wild. Yeah. So, again, the cool thing is they're showing up on articles about writing, about blogging, about working for yourself, cool, about building your, yeah, personal brand. You know, again, the, yeah, exact kind of folks that hopefully my book would appeal to. So my thought is it can't hurt. You know, who knows, yeah, how much it's helping, but it certainly can't hurt.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I think that's, you know, this all about that subconscious impression and making sure that You know, when people see your book, they're like, oh, I actually have seen that somewhere before, but I can't tell. And it's that random blog post. Another interesting thing that you did was you did something for your birthday. Can you talk a little bit about that, how you use your birthday as a way to promote your book even further?
Yeah. So, you know, I think, like I said, if you get to do an in-person book launch and you have an event and signings and a book tour, you build some good momentum early on. Because unfortunately that momentum was squashed by not only our inability to do things in person, but also you may remember, at least, you know, here in the US, Amazon was only shipping essential items for a period of time in March. And that was immediately after my book launch. So for some folks, if they wanted to buy the book, they were seeing that they might not get it for like 6 or 8 weeks. And that's not great for momentum, because that delays your, you know, your reviews, it delays all of that. So I tried to really back away from thinking of my book as like one big launch day, and then that was it, and really thinking, how can I continue to promote this, you know, keep it alive, keep it on a low level, just sort of always there. And think of it more as a long-term strategy. And so I thought of, what are these opportunities I could do for like mini launches, if you will. And obviously the book's launched already, but, you know, sort of mini promotions to drive that momentum back up. And so my thought was, my birthday is in September, and it's, you know, it's a few months out, obviously. It's, you know, 6-7 months out from when the book launched at the end of February. And so I thought, well, this is a good time to bring it back up, you know, bring it back up into people's consciousness and, you know, remind them. And we were at least at that point a little bit further out of the woods in terms of the scary beginnings of COVID, when we didn't know what was happening. So it seemed like an okay time. So to align with my birthday, I dropped the price of the ebook to 99 cents. And that same day, I also ran a number of cheap promotions that, you know, with various newsletters and websites that promote ebook deals. So, you know, BookBub, you know, Librarians Daily, you know, there's like a whole bunch of those discount ebooks, newsletters, you know, things like that, that were pretty cheap. I mean, I spent all in all probably less than $200 on, wow, you know, maybe 7 or 8 smaller newsletters that appeal to people who like discount ebooks, you know? And then I just lowered the price for a whole day. I ended up leaving it for 2 days, actually, because there was still a lot of momentum, I think, as people were probably opening their emails the next day. So yeah, I just kind of let that happen. And that created a surge of sales. It helped bring the book back up in a number of different ranking categories to, you know, top 10, top 100, et cetera. And it actually hit number one bestseller in marketing for the day, which was, a huge, huge honor. Definitely one that I'm holding on to.
Yeah. Checklist. Not only did you write a book, but now it's like, I wrote a number one best-selling book in marketing.
Yeah.
Really fast. I think it's interesting you sponsored, you spent $200 on the newsletters. What are the things that you do to not just get into newsletters, but I'm more particularly interested in getting reviewers or influencers to review your book? Did you offer them incentives or anything else, or you just like ship them a copy of your book and hope that they actually write a review about your book?
So here's what I have found. I didn't send the book to anybody who didn't tell me to first. And I think again, that's, to me, that's like giving homework to a stranger, and nobody likes that. Right. And I think I've also had enough of that experience myself, where I'll get a book from someone I don't know. I have no idea how they got my address, and it says like, for your consideration. And I'm thinking, honestly, I'm a little creeped out. Like, how did you find me? How did you send me this book? And what do you expect me to do with it? It feels like a burden in a way. Yeah. And I'm running out of room on my bookshelves, so I'm sure I'm not the only one. So I reached out to about 100 or so total people. And those were not the kind of mega influencers that I think people go after, you know, a Kardashian or Oprah or, you know, whoever else. It was mostly people who are in my space, you know, who are in the marketing space, who are in the creator space, you know, who are writers, bloggers, video producers, the kind of people that my audience would respect and look up to and, you know, respect their opinion. And I asked them first if they'd be interested in, of course, reading like an early PDF copy of it to get an idea. some subset of that audience, I asked if they'd be willing to write, you know, a blurb for the book. So I have about 17 total people who are in the space who agreed to, you know, give their thoughts for me to print in the book or put in the description or use on the cover, et cetera. And then, you know, a good number of people after that who just said that they would read it, promote it on social, you know, that they would leave a review. But yeah, it was honestly, it was a lot of just manual outreach. I wrote individualized emails to these people. I did not, you know, spam email a bunch of people, copy paste style. It was really individual outreach. Now I know I'm in a blessed position, which is, you know, like I said, prior to COVID, I was privileged to have it be my job to travel around and speak at conferences. So a lot of these folks I knew personally. You know, maybe we weren't the best of friends, but we had had conversations. I knew them. You know, I knew that they had kids or a dog or, you know, other sort of personal means of connecting with them. So it made it a lot easier because it wasn't a cold outreach. You know, they were people that I had had contact with. And that certainly makes it a lot easier than cold emailing someone you've never connected with before and asking them to invest several hours in reading your book and then writing a review and putting their name behind it. You know, I think that's a much harder request. So yeah, it was the people that I had some level of contact with already that not only were most likely to say yes, but ultimately provided some of the best early feedback and reviews.
What I really like about what you how you did this was you asked for permission first, right? Like instead of like,
yeah,
like you're right. Like imagine just getting a random book and you're like, how did they find my address? It's not on any website.
Right.
I'd be freaking out as well. But I think, yeah, that's one takeaway that I got from that is just ask for permission. And I think people they really do want to help.
Well, the other thing I had too is, you know, I think, and most books do this, you have some sort of launch team, which are, you know, usually like, I don't want to say like less influential, but like these could be your friends. Like they don't have to be people with a massive platform, right? They're just anyone can be in your launch team. And these are people who are willing to, you know, engage with your posts about the book launch, who are willing to read a copy early and hopefully post a review on launch day, who, you know, favorite your tweets and retweet things, you know, and post photos of the book and just generally act as sort of your support tribe on launch day to help amplify those messages. So I did have a group of about 40 or 50 people, which I know some people have much bigger launch groups, but I wanted to keep it intimate. I didn't want people to feel like a number, you know. I wanted them to know that they were, you know, I was grateful and I could individually address people still. So those folks all got an advanced copy of the book. I gave most of them a digital copy because some were international and it was just a much easier way to get that copy to them. And they read it in advance. I reminded them, you know, leading up to the days of to launch day to have their reviews ready and to post them that morning. And so you do have to follow up with people and really help them prepare. The other thing that was really important is these people that you want to support you to post things on social media or write reviews, like you have to make it really easy for them. So, you know, what I did is I made for everyone who, you know, was an early reviewer who was writing a blurb, those influencers, I made a bunch of graphics for them to use on social media that included their quotes or snippets from their quotes in different layouts, different options. I sent them the text of their review that as it was, you know, edited in final form so that they could just paste that if they wanted. I wrote some pre-written tweets, like here's what I had to say about @MDiesel's new book, you know, just kind of make it as easy as possible for them to share and engage. And the last thing I did is I emailed every single one of those people and asked them to paste their review as a review on Amazon. You know, it was like you all you need to do is just open Amazon, click this link and, you know, hit review and paste the thing you already wrote for me. It's very little extra work, you know, and a good number of them did that. So I think similar to when we were talking about reaching out to podcast guests, like anyone you're asking to support you, you got to make it as easy as possible for them to do it. Not only because it makes it easier for them and that's a nice thing to do, but it just increases the chances that you're going to get the outcome you're going for.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. Yeah, that's a lot of things to take away. Thank you for sharing all of that. I'm going to ask the other side. I think we've been talking a lot about what things worked. what things didn't end up working where like your team pulled it off and it didn't have the same shareability or effect that you were hoping it would do?
Yeah. So, I mean, a couple of things. I tried to just make a lot of calls to action to my audience, and some landed and some didn't. I found that if I was just saying, hey, go buy my book, or you can still get my book, that kind of thing didn't matter to people. But when I posted updates about, you know, we hit a milestone number of reviews or sales or rankings, people tended to connect with that better. So, you know, just the blatant call for a purchase didn't tend to work as well. Go figure. and the other thing I tried is I bought ads, like standard, you know, squares and rectangles, from a couple different book-related websites. And again, just small buys, just $20 or $50, just to test things out and see what was working. And quite a few of those didn't get the results that I was hoping for. You know, that's not to say that they couldn't work or they don't work in general. Just that I'm probably not the best person to be setting up those kinds of campaigns. I think that's probably the more likely scenario because they do seem to have good results for some other folks. But for me and for what I set up, it didn't work as I hoped. I also spent a lot of time on Quora, answering content marketing related questions. And you know, you can't really promote yourself, but I did have my identifier, you know, my photo and my, sort of title, my name that shows up indicating that I was the author of this book, thinking that, you know, maybe people would like the answer, get curious and buy a book. Again, tough to say if that did anything, but it wasn't really scalable. So I wasn't able to keep up with doing that, you know, on a regular basis amidst everything else going on. So, I mean, it really was a game of experimenting. And I think that to me, that's really the important lesson about all of this, because yes, it's great that, you know, all these downloads happen on the stock photo website, but you know, it could easily could have not worked, you know, and something else could have performed really well. I think it's really more about, I was trying to think outside the box and do different things. And that reminds me, I don't think I even mentioned this, but I also carried my book around with me everywhere that I went, which again, it's COVID, so I haven't gone many places. And I would take a photo of my book, you know, on the table next to a latte at a cafe, or on the table, you know, next to my laptop when I'm working outside at a picnic table, you know? So just kind of, again, those sort of natural style photos of, if someone were here reading my book, what would that picture look like? And adding it to places like Yelp or Foursquare or Google Maps as an image of that location. Again, no idea if that's resulted in any sales, but each of those photos that I uploaded got around 1,000 views, and I'll take 1,000 views for free, you know?
You are such a creative guerrilla marketing genius. I don't know. Maybe you should write a book about guerrilla marketing, guerrilla content marketing. It'd be really interesting. These are stuff I would have never thought of, like stock photos and posting up on Google Maps and Yelp. Like, dang, super, super interesting and creative.
But you know, the thing that we always say is like, marketers ruin everything. So I'm sure that, you know, 2 years from now, stock photo sites will just be
overwhelmed, you're right,
with crappy product photos probably.
All right, we'll keep that a secret between the two of us and the listeners here. I want to, you know, we've talked a lot about this promotion tactics. I want to pull it back together and ask, you know, if there's any results that you can share with all the tactics that you've talked about. You know, can you share about numbers of books sold or sales or introduction? If not, that's okay, but I'm curious what the results have been.
Yeah. So one of the things you learn when you publish a book is it's actually much harder than you think to get a lot of that data. even for me, I self-published, so I have access to some of these dashboards, but the data is not, especially for marketers who are used to being able to pull and manipulate data at our will. You know, the data from companies like Amazon, unsurprisingly, are not very user-friendly, you know, not sortable, it's not very helpful. But all of that to say, like I said, the data from Unsplash, where I uploaded those stock photos, we're looking at nearly 500,000 impressions, you know, views of the photos that they showed up in search, over 2,200 downloads of the photos. So that to me is, you know, even more awareness kind of growing exponentially from there. Tough to quantify sales, but again, I'll take it. Each of those photos I talked about adding to Google Maps or Foursquare or other sort of location review sites earned about 1,000 views each. So again, we'll take free impressions. The day that I ran my birthday promotion, I don't have the final numbers. I'm not able to view them all in aggregate, but I know that I sold over 500 books that day. And they were eBooks, so not the physical books. And they were also discounted. So, you know, we're not talking about, you know, months of mortgage payments or anything here, but, you know, that selling several hundred books in a single short time span like that definitely helps with your rankings on Amazon and all of that, which sort of creates additional sales and awareness from there. So still a perk, even if, you know, it wasn't crazy. And the one thing I know is we, you know, they often say that, you know, most books that are published in the world sell fewer than 1,000 copies. Like the vast majority of books don't hit that 1,000 sale mark. That's sort of like the cutoff point when you know you've done something that's going to have some staying power. And we definitely exceeded that. We've exceeded the 2,500 mark before the birthday sale. So I don't have, again, unfortunately, I'm not able to access the real time full updated numbers. And you've got to like pull Barnes and Noble numbers separately and Amazon and then Kindle and add them all up. There's definitely an opportunity here for someone to create a really great dashboard as a software. But yeah, there's, it's been great. And I think, like I said, I'm more focused on the impact than necessarily the income. Not to say that money's not great. We all need money, right? Like we need it to make it through life. And, especially now when everyone's employment situations are so, uncertain in many cases, but, for me, every person who picks up a copy of that book, I mean, they may do their job in a completely different way for the rest of their lives. It may change their career. It may change their confidence in their own creativity. It may change their organization. You know, if that organization is a nonprofit, it could amplify the impact of that nonprofit. If it's a small business, you know, that could be the difference between the business surviving COVID or not. So in my mind, I'm really trying to focus on that long-term impact because I think that's where, in my mind, the true value of this book for me and for the world will be is in the difference it makes in those readers' lives. So I'm trying to focus more on that, which is, of course, you know, we all need sort of a source of positivity and inspiration in this year that is 2020. So I'll take that.
That's so good. Yeah, that's such a good attitude and just giving back to the community, helping out more people. I'm just about to wrap up. Just two last questions. The first one is if you had one or two pieces or however many advice you want to give to business owners or entrepreneurs or consultants who are interested in writing a book, what would be those few pieces of advice that you'd want to share to them?
The thing you really need to do is you really need to break it down into smaller pieces. And for me, my book was very well structured. It was very organized and compartmentalized. You know, there were many small chapters built around a clear outline, and those chapters all had similar sections and subsections. So it made it very easy for me to sit down and make measurable progress. The one thing about writing a book, and most of us have never embarked on a project of that size. And it can be really, really frustrating to be creating something for that long. I mean, months you're going to be working on this thing and it still won't be done. So having it broken down into smaller pieces, whether that's chapters, sections, examples, sources, like break it down into the smallest possible pieces so you could feel those mini milestones as they come. Because otherwise you have a feeling like you're working on something for nothing, that there's no progress because you haven't hit the finish line, you know? So I think that's really helpful. It's like, give yourself those mini milestones and celebrations to get through the rough times. And the other thing I will say is you need someone to be your cheerleader. And it doesn't matter if that's, you know, your partner, your roommate, your mom, your, you know, a book coach that you hire, like it doesn't matter who that is. You need 100%. You need someone to be your cheerleader and your champion, because again, this is a big project, and it's a hard project. And there's going to be days you wake up and would rather do anything else. And you need someone to remind you of that why you're doing this and who you're doing it for. And, you know, remind you that you're not crazy and you're competent and you're going to finish this book and keep going. And you'll need that support. So have that person picked out and prepped in advance.
So good. You're right. I think that's, people don't realize how hard it is to put it all together. One final question. Where can people find out more about you? Where can people find more about the book? What is your call to action for my listeners right now?
Yeah, well, you found me on Twitter, so you guys are all welcome to follow me there. I'm at MDEZIEL, so M Diesel. You could certainly do that as well. Love to see you there. If you want to learn more about me and the book and all the things that my team can do to help you and your teams tell better stories, our website is storyfuel.co. So story, F-U-E-L.co. And you'll find all the info there. You'll find the social links for where you can connect with me on other platforms. You'll find information about the book, consulting, speaking, anything else you may need. And I would love to hear from you all and see what stories you're telling.
Well, awesome, Melanie. I really do appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
And thanks for letting me share my story.
Well, that was it for this episode. Wow, that was such a great episode. It's one of the longest episodes I've had in a while. Well, I want to remind you that make sure to download the free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode. It is just so much information in there that you can take away to accelerate the growth of your business. Why take notes when you can just steal mine? Go to growthtoday.fm/121 to get it now. Or you can find the link in the description of the show or wherever podcast app you use. Now, before I end, I want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They work with high growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue and marketing operations that accelerate demand generation and pipeline growth. To learn more and get $500 in free consulting time, visit them at growthtoday.fm/42 or find that link in the description. Please also support me. There's three easy ways. First, you can share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn and tell a friend about this podcast. Second, you can join the Grow Today mailing list where you get the cheat sheet directly emailed to you. And third, leave a review on Apple Podcasts so other people can find out more about this show. Now, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe. And as always, keep on growing.